Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome to Unhappy Hour, the show where we bitch about all the things we love to hate every single week. I'm your host, Matt Bellassai. I'm here in the studio, as always, with my producer, Barry Finkel. Hi, Barry.
Hey, Matt. How's it going?
I'm pretty good. Thank you for asking.
Oh, that's great.
Shut up, Barry. Okay. We just got back from LA. I had to spend like 5 days with you, and I've had enough. We got a great show for you today, so let's get right into the intro. Here we go. Our first segment will be Worst Things First, those glorious few minutes where I yell about the shittiest news of the week. After that, I've got some beef with anyone who has anything bad to say about Beyoncé, Queen Bee, Beyoncé, Giselle, Knowles Carter. I will be debunking everyone who's ever said anything negative about her, you motherfucks. Because it was my B-Day last week, and it's her B-Day in like 3 weeks. So it's Matt and Beyoncé season. Matt Bellassai is how you would pronounce it if we were one. And finally, we're bringing back one half of one of my favorite podcasts, Throwing Shade. Aaron Gibson will be in the stude. We're going to talk about the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal, a comedy festival, which was a tiny bit of a shit show this year, according to the rumors. Also, Aaron has a brand new book coming out this September, and we're going to talk about so much more. That's coming up, so stay tuned. Let's get into it. Let's do it. Let's start the show. All right, worst things first. The segment where I bring you the worst news of the week. First, a grandma in Texas shot a man who walked into her house after she saw him masturbating while riding his bike.
Wait.
So.
Hold on.
Here's the story. Basically, this grandma was just taking the garbage out, you know, and then she took the garbage out, am I right? With a gun.
Oh.
Because she saw this man riding a bike while masturbating, which honestly...
Wait! Do you remember when I texted you about that?
Because you were masturbating on a bike?
Yeah, and texting at the same time. No, I saw a dude masturbate. There was this man who was biking, and he had like this big platform, and his dog was sitting on the platform in front of the bike, and I was so distracted by the adorable dog. And then when I finally looked at him, I looked at his face, and he was making this weird face. And then I looked, and he was wearing an apron, and one of his hands was like definitely doing some stuff down there. And you were the first person I texted about it.
Did you shoot him?
Unfortunately, no.
Then you're not a hero. You are complicit in his behavior. You just let it happen.
What did the grandma do?
Also, he was wearing an apron, so he probably was just cooking. He was mincing something.
Yeah, mincing his dick.
Anyway, this man was riding his bike while masturbating, and this woman saw it, and she yelled at him to stop, and he didn't. But then she went inside, and he tried to follow her inside, which is a no-no. And so he, then she, like, took out a gun and shot him through the door. And he's not dead. He is expected to survive. But this woman is a hero.
I just feel like he really learned his lesson.
We'll see. Apparently, it's not even the first time that he has been, like, charged with mischief. Because the week before, he was charged with exposing himself after he was allegedly caught walking down the street with no clothes. So at least he was on a bike this time. Next! A 27-year-old man faked his own death and staged mortuary photos to stop his wife from asking him for money.
Whoa.
As you do. Basically, I guess his wife wanted some money, and this man was like, I don't want to give you any money. So he staged photos of himself with cotton wool stuffed into his nostrils and mouth and a white sheet over his body. I don't know what this man thinks that dead people look like. So he's like, let me just shove a cotton ball up my nostril.
That's what they do.
And put a bed sheet over myself. These photos, you'll have to look it up because they don't look like a dead person at all. First of all, he looks like he's smiling. He looks like he's just woke up from, like, the dentist.
Oh my God, yeah, no.
Like, the dentist just barely put him to sleep. That's what it looks like. So he sent his wife these photos. She lives in Honduras. I guess the, like, local media started reporting on his death, and his, like, parents and the rest of his family got wind of it and were like, oh no, he's dead. So he had to, like...
What did he think was going to happen?
You know, the other option is just don't send her money. Or unless you are legally obligated to send her money. Next, a woman in Florida, only in Florida, was fleeing police for an alleged drug possession. They were chasing her down. She ditched her car and ran into a pasture where a herd of 16 cows is responsible for helping capture her. Boom! Anyway, a group of officers who are, like, watching this chase happening from the helicopter said, if you see a large group of cows, they're literally following her. Moving along.
Moving along.
Last week, travelers in Berlin got caught in a rather unexpected airport issue involving sex toys. Because the airport was suspicious of this man with a large bag that he refused to open, insisting that it was full of technical stuff. The entire terminal, Terminal D, was closed at 11 a.m. while a suspicious bag was inspected because the contents could not be discovered from a scan. And the police said it was suspicious. The owner was called to discuss the matter, but he refused to open it, and everybody was like, what's going on? What's in here? Turns out it included a variety of sex toys, such as a vibrator. That's what this article says.
Wow.
I'm glad that they specified. An hour-long investigation involving the bomb squad determined that they were not dangerous, just dickalicious. I don't know. I can't think of an adverb, an adjective. I once had a similar scenario. I had my People's Choice Award that I won in 2016. Drew, I don't know if I've mentioned that before.
You won a... That's incredible.
Yeah, this is the first time I'm ever talking about this. Mm-hmm. I won a People's Choice Award in 2016.
Mazel tov, you're so accomplished.
Thank you. And I had to bring it on the airplane. I didn't want to put it in the checked bag. I wanted it with me. But it is just a heavy-looking piece of glass, and the outline looks like a giant dildo.
Mm-hmm.
And the screen, it came up, and it just looked like a giant butt plug. And the person was like, what the fuck is that? We're going to have to take a look. And then I bent over and spread my cheeks. And then they let me go.
And they let the Berlin people go too, right?
Yes. Eventually, everybody continued along with their day. It was just a regular old incident. The point is, do not be embarrassed by your suitcase full of dildos. If you're brave enough to bring it on an airplane, you're brave enough to display it to the world. Why not? Also, what did you think was going to happen? Like, you kind of expect that you might have to open your bag for someone. And finally, the official location for the U.S. Pizza Museum will be Chicago and
yes.
not New York City, bitches.
Take that.
And people are not happy about it. People from New York aren't happy about it. First of all, it's a fucking pizza museum, all right? It does not matter. If you're from New York and you're shitting your pants over a fucking pizza museum because it'll be in Chicago and not New York, shut the fuck up. It doesn't matter. Just go to Two Bros, buy a dollar slice, and shove it in your fucking esophagus. So you shut the fuck up.
For someone who claims to not care, really sounds like you care.
And that's it for Worst Things First. Next up, we got a deep dive in honor of Beyonce. Sasha Fierce. Illuminati. Bootylicious. Deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive, deep dive. Deep dive.
Deep dive.
Deep dive. Deep dive. All right. So this week I saw our Lord and Savior, Beyonce Giselle Knowles Carter, and her husband, Sean, performing the On the Run 2 tour out in New Jersey. It was my third time seeing Beyonce live. Obviously, it was spectacular and amazing and life-changing, and nobody commands a fucking audience like Beyonce. Not to mention, before she even went on, the police made every one of the 50,000 people in the audience evacuate because of a tornado warning in New Jersey. And we all did it, okay? We waited under fucking concrete for like an hour just to see Beyonce. There aren't many performers who people would be willing to put up with that shit for, but when Beyonce tells you to wait, you fucking wait. We also saw Beyonce's cover of the Vogue September issue come out this week, which she reportedly had unprecedented control over, because if anybody can look at Anna Wintour in the face and say, you will remove your sunglasses and never meet my eyes directly, it's Miss Motherfucking Carter, okay? But of course, whenever there is Beyonce news, there are Beyonce naysayers who like to crawl out of their little cupboards and fucking fart out their diarrhea opinions as if hating the most nominated woman in Grammy's history makes them fucking special. Hating one of the greatest entertainers of all time is not a fucking personality. It doesn't make you interesting. It doesn't mean you have good taste in music. It means your soul will never know peace. It means you would rather willingly scoff at greatness than accept happiness and joy. It means you're a fucking idiot. And one day Beyonce will strap on her 6-inch stilettos and dance on your grave. So today I would like to debunk some of the hateful claims against Beyonce, because these are facts. She has sold over 100 million records, one of the world's best-selling music artists, 22 Grammys, most awarded artist at the MTV Video Music Awards, the highest paid black musician in history, and she's the first and only musical act in Billboard chart history to debut at number one with their first 6 solo studio albums. You don't get there through mediocrity, motherfuckers. And I am joined by Barry and producer Josh, all of whom went with me to see Beyonce in person last week. Welcome.
Hi.
It was my first time seeing her, and it was amazing. We brought Josh on, by the way, because he's essentially a Beyonce expert.
Encyclopedia.
And Beyonce historian, yes. First, the biggest claim I would say against Beyonce is that she is overrated. No! You know who else is overrated? Your mom. When she walked into the alley to give birth to you and the stray cats moved out of her fucking way. Because they gave her way more respect than she fucking deserved, is my point. Nothing irritates me more than people who dislike something only because other people like it.
It reminds me of that meme of Gabrielle Union where she's like, did that put money in your pocket? Did you get the job?
Yeah, yeah. No, that was my, I'm like, I wrote, maybe if you'd sacrifice to the same God that Beyonce did, you'd be a billionaire and not just a scrub who tweets, I don't really like Beyonce during your 15-minute break from Jimmy John's.
Cold.
No disrespect to people who work at Jimmy John's, except for Jimmy John. Next! People say everything she does is scripted and choreographed and manufactured. As if, like, if they're, you could just, like, plug anybody into the Beyonce diva machine and an icon would get pooped out. They'd be everywhere. Wrong, bitch. Motherfuckers have tried and motherfuckers have failed. You will never be Beyonce. Also, sorry, every other artist you apparently see is just, like, standing naked in the middle of a dirt ditch. No. Effort goes into every single fucking person that you like. Does that make sense? It's just like, don't act like the person you see is just like freshly birthed and like no effort has gone into creating who they are as an artist.
It's like, why are you mad? Because she's prepared?
Yeah.
That literally makes no sense. Like, she's competent.
Also, guaranteed, she could stand in the middle of a dirt fucking patch and naked and sing better than any of your other little
divas. In fact, she has. Deja vu.
Yeah.
Baby boy. Mm-hmm. She's in the middle of that field and she like does the African dance and does the flip over her head.
The other thing I hate is when people are like, well, like hundreds of people write her music for her. She doesn't even write herself. False. God didn't personally write the Bible, all right? He had his apostles do that shit. He spoke through them.
And it's just factually incorrect, right? Like, she wrote Bootylicious. She was the youngest. At one point, she was, like, the youngest woman to ever be inducted into, like, ASCAP, which is, like, the Association for Songwriters.
Right.
And, like, a lot of people who we consider, like, the best artists of all time didn't write their music. Like,
no.
Whitney Houston didn't write. The only person that I think did write all of their music, and that's why they're like filthy rich, is like Mariah Carey.
Yeah.
This would be an okay argument if the songs didn't knock. They're amazing.
Yeah, it's like,
who the fuck cares?
Hundreds of artists are performing songs written by other people, but there's still only one Beyonce.
All that does is show me that on top of being talented as a singer, as a dancer, as a mother, she also has the skill of discernment. Like, you can put things in front of her and she's like, that one.
Yeah. And she makes it fucking amazing.
Amazing.
Then there are people who say like, oh, she can't sing or dance, which is, I genuinely don't know if these people believe that when they say it, because it is very easily debunked.
And she's singing while she does it. Like, it's on like professional athlete status. Like, do you know the amount of endurance that it takes in order to do like Egyptian scales that she does over like pop music while like hitting like an 8 count? Mm-hmm. And keeping her breath and control? Like, that's insane.
I thought of that this morning while I was singing in the shower and I like lost my breath. And that was just from like shaking the shampoo bottle to get to the bottom of it. The next one is when people are like, oh, Beyonce can't act. And you know what?
That might be true.
That one is true.
Yes. We'll give you that one.
And we have to accept that and get over it. Even though Foxy Cleopatra single-handedly revived the Austin Powers franchise.
Carmen a Hip Opera is a just work of art.
Didn't she murder Idris Elba in like a movie?
She was married to Idris Elba and obsessed when she was like, and when she fought that white lady that was like from
the original Becky.
Yeah, exactly.
The point is she Meryl Streep? No, Meryl Streep wishes.
But okay. We're all good at something.
Right. Also, the movie screen is too limited for the force that is Beyonce.
Yeah, that's like one medium. So she needs all of them.
Also, there is something about acting in music videos where like Lemonade, she is performing and acting in a way that is absolutely gorgeous and absolutely beautiful and not every actor could do necessarily. Yeah.
She's performed like she's in love with Jay-Z for like 20 years.
Oh.
So.
I ain't say nothing about that.
Then there's like people are like, oh, Beyonce thinks she's a god. Yes. She thinks the truth. Next. People are like, oh, Beyonce acts like she invented feminism. Or that she's not a feminist. It's one or the other. That's what they say.
It's so annoying because people always want to like examine and scrutinize her feminism. And I just don't understand why, because it's like, do you see how many people have, A, come to understand, like, what feminism means? Like, her using that, like, quote from Chimamanda Adichie, like, that just says that feminism is, like, economic, political, and social equality of the sexes was such a easy way to explain the concept.
Yeah.
And she had such a big platform in order to do it. So, like, why are you mad? Like, I don't right. understand that.
I like, genuinely believe that using that quote, like, made millions of people understand what feminism
is. It literally did for the popular masses what Tumblr did for, like, people who grew up after MTV stopped playing music videos. Like, they got access to language that they needed in order to express how they were feeling that they didn't have access to before.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Betty Friedan, who? Gloria Steinem, who? Beyonce.
Exactly.
Then there's people who are like, oh, she's in the Illuminati and like controls the global government.
I fucking wish.
I hope so.
We would be so lucky if Beyonce were pulling the strings.
Would you, if you, I don't, well, are you in the Illuminati, Matt?
I cannot either confirm nor deny. I will say that my body is triangle shaped, so.
I mean, I would join.
If the Illuminati were real, Tidal would be more successful.
Oh my God. I was honestly saying, like, if Beyonce couldn't get me to download Tidal, then that just is very representative of where that streaming service is. But I did download it for, like, the Carter's
Same.
Album.
Yeah, for the Carter's. I just canceled it, but I also loved that as I canceled it, we went to the concert where they just were giving out 6-month trials.
Literally.
6-month free trials to 50,000 people in one night.
Like, yeah.
Because they know you're not going to cancel it once you sign up.
Yeah, but also...
They don't know me. I set an alarm in my calendar. I was like...
I have signed up and canceled multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And I now have, like, multiple different email addresses signed up to it. But I think I pay for it. I don't know.
Yeah, I've given them some money. I've given them a lot of money, actually. Like, I don't feel any sort of way because, like, Beyonce, like, literally... has a direct deposit into my Chase account.
I bought that goddamn coffee table book.
That you have never opened.
That I'm pretty sure I'm the only owner of. Like, I don't know if anybody else bought that coffee
table
book.
And how much was it?
Too much. But it's a limited edition, and I will use it to kill a man one day. Because it weighs like 30 pounds. And that's it for this week's Deep Dive. Thank you to Josh for coming in and imparting your Beyonce wisdom upon us, and Barry for also being here. My guest complainer today is Erin Gibson. Erin is one of our favorite comedy queens. She's been on Parks and Rec, Community. She co-hosts the amazing podcast Throwing Shade and creator of Funny or Die's Gay of Thrones. Yes, with Jonathan Van Ness. Hi, Erin. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're having you back on the show.
That's
right. You have been a guest with Brian Safi, your co-host.
My co-host, yep.
Since we've had you on the show before, but we'll ask the same question we ask everybody, which is, what is one thing you hate that everybody else loves?
I think I hate rosé now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's controversial.
It's starting to taste like vomit.
Have you thrown up a lot after drinking rosé?
Not once. It's not like whiskey.
Yeah.
Where I used to drink it out of a coffee cup in high school.
Oh, no.
That was when I didn't know the effects of whiskey. But rosé now is starting to taste like either throw up or soap.
I have drank so much wine as now like part of my job that like every glass of wine is terrible. So it's...
Are you... That's so sad.
Can I tell you an embarrassing thing I did just 2 days ago? We went to this
nice restaurant here in LA, and I was drinking a whiskey drink, and this man came up and was like, oh, you're not drinking wine? Which is, like, a lot of people say that to me, and I'm like, no, I'm drinking whiskey. And he was like, oh, I'll get you another one. And he did, and I Barry was with me, and I was like, oh, yeah, this happens all the time. And only, like, 45 minutes later did I realize he was the sommelier, and he was just asking if I was drinking wine. Because that's his fucking job.
It was more of a personal affront to him that you weren't drinking and less of a fan moment.
Like, literally his job is to just ask, oh, you're not drinking wine? And I just was like, oh, yes, this is all about me right now.
But now also, like, fuck him for being so arrogant. Like, I'm not. You can see I'm not. Like, why are we talking about it?
Right, right. Also, I don't need, like, the concept of a sommelier to me is, like, I don't need someone to tell me what I would like to order.
One of my friends I've known for the longest time is a wine writer.
Uh-huh.
And, but I still can't deal with the fact that I don't understand the entire system.
Right.
Like, isn't everything oaky? Isn't everything floral?
Yeah. You can smell whatever you want if you believe hard enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And what if you have a cold? It's totally different.
Exactly.
I don't know.
This is just a wild left turn because I have no good transitions. But I want to ask about, so you were at Just for Laughs in Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
I want to just get angry about this because I am so angry about it, and I wasn't even there. For people who don't know, I mean, there were a lot of things that happened.
So many things.
One was Southern Mama, some YouTube guy, whose stuff I haven't seen, and I, like, live on the internet. He also describes himself as the fastest growing comedian ever. So he was, like, one of the variety comics to watch, one of 10.
Somehow.
The only, like, straight white man of the 10.
Yeah.
I know he, like, didn't get along very well with the other comedians. And then
he straight up started a fight on one of the panels that he was on.
Yeah. And then was outspoken about the fact that he, like, thought comedy was not a space to talk about race and gender, but also, like, just didn't really tell jokes by
no
the
jokes.
Sound of it. It was just,
I
like...
I think he told one joke that has been attributed to Buster Keaton or something.
Yeah. His opening joke was, like, a toast to our wives and girlfriends, may they never meet.
Yes.
And
which
it's
is
like,
a joke from 1923. He just... I mean, I feel two ways about him. Number one, I just feel like, I guess there's a space for everyone if uh-huh. to do whatever they want. I'm not going to be like a First Amendment cook or whatever. But I think that he, at a certain point, what I think people aren't talking about is the fact that he started all this shit with these queer people of color, the other comedians on the panel, and started shit trying to tell them what is and is not appropriate, and he doesn't even do stand-up. And then he was allowed to then later that day perform on a showcase with them.
Right.
No one ever thought – everyone was like, oh, what an asshole. But no one ever thought, like, hey, is this putting our other performers in danger that mm-hmm. this guy is so combative and so hostile?
Yeah.
Because that's a fear. I mean, as a woman, if I'm in a room with a bunch of guys, straight guys, I'm immediately like, where's the exit? Even if I'm not thinking it, I'm like subconsciously going, how do I get out of this if I need to?
Yeah.
So I feel like there was that thing that I didn't really see people talking about. And also, there was a discussion of whether or not people should talk about this online and give him more of a platform.
Right, right.
I don't think there's a right answer for it.
No, no. An extension of that has been, like, we're only talking about him and not the 9 other people who are amazing. And
yeah.
And I love all other 9 people. Most of them have been guests on this show. And, like, we should keep talking about all of them.
I get it's but you can also justify it, like, look, this is still going on.
Yeah.
And this shouldn't be happening. And where were the checks and balances to keep this guy from, you know, verbally attacking these strangers?
Yeah.
Who he should be, you know, I don't know, asking for tips on how to be a better comedian and how do you tell a joke and what's the setup?
Well, another thing I was reading touched on this, which is, like, in improv, which you're like an improv person, right?
Yeah.
You're like UCB.
Yeah. I mean, I used to.
Yeah, yeah.
I dabble. I couldn't take the 11 p.m. Tuesday night rehearsals anymore.
Yeah. But there was an article I was reading that was, like, part of the scary thing about being like marginalized within the comedy community. If you're like part of an improv class and you're on a show with a straight white man, you have to kind of go along with his choices on stage, which might be racist or bigoted or something. Like, have you experienced that?
Okay, I actually have a great story. So Susan Messing was my first improv teacher in Chicago. Mm-hmm. She's kind of a legend there. She is a legend there. And she had this really – I don't even know if this applies now, but I really – I always think about it. She was like, when a guy calls you a slut on stage, when a straight white guy calls you a slut on stage or does something aggro like that, you go, I sure am. You want to see all my abortions? And you make him regret ever saying that. You have to teach people. It's kind of a hard place to come from because you have to top from the bottom a little bit because they're always trying to be like, no, you're going to do this. I'm going to call the shots, blah, 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 blah. So I always thought about that. Like, how do you make someone instantly regret everything they just said?
Yeah.
Without looking like an asshole. In improv, people know the deal that you're yes anding and you're like, okay, you want to go here? Let's do it. I'm going to show you how wrong you are.
Right.
But I don't know if you can do that now without looking like you're also an asshole.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But I think, I think like that's, you have to like fight fire with fire.
She's a nihilist though. She's like,
that's where we've come as
a
society.
She's like, yeah, suck his dick on stage. She's like, wait, hold on, Susan. I don't think so.
Yeah, the best defense is a good offense, you know.
Yeah, tell him to pull his dick out and stick it in your butt. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that is part of the scary thing about improv. It feels like you kind of are giving up a little bit of control.
Yes, but when it's with people you really trust and you love, it feels really good.
Yeah.
And it's really fun because you get to find new things together. I just think it's really hard to – how do you put that group together? Because usually with improv groups, you either put yourself together or your cast together. And that's just – it's like a certain magic that has to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do it.
I don't. That's why I just
get
do
a casting
stand-up.
Director.
I'm like,
you're
fuck
smart.
It.
You don't have to deal with anyone's schedule. You don't have to deal with anyone else's thing.
I also
get all the glory and all the defeat.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the hard part, though. It's like you have a bad show. It's just you and your sorrows. And you have to go back to a hotel room and just like lie there.
Oh, I heard a rule about that. You're only allowed to be as upset as the set last.
Oh, interesting.
So if it was 5 minutes.
So for 5 hours.
5 minutes. Oh, sorry. Then multiply by hours. 30 minutes, 30 hours.
The other thing that I saw that you talked a lot about was Hannah Gadsby performed.
Yeah.
And Nanette is like, I've only watched it once and I feel like I need to savor it and go back and watch it like at half speed just so I can fully – I feel like it like shook me to my core. She's, you know, a lesbian, middle-aged comic who has kind of says she's made her career on self-deprecating humor.
It was – when I watched it like the weekend it came out and because I got texts from many people that were like, if you don't watch this, I can't talk to you on Monday.
Yeah.
And it was so confusing because at some points I was like crying.
Yeah.
And I was, isn't it crazy to like watch comedy and just be
sob.
Crying and then be like, yes, and then laughing and just getting exactly what you said and being so honest and raw. And she changed the game.
Yeah.
And it was so obvious at JFL because everyone was freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
All the straight guys were losing their shit.
Good.
They couldn't. Handle. So she was on a showcase with like 8 other comedians and she was doing like a 5 or 7 minute set. I wouldn't say like her set was like the best. It wasn't the worst. And everyone was there to see her. Everyone was just there to see her do whatever the fuck she wants. You know? Like she even did a long thing where the mic stand was wobbly and she said, as a lesbian, it really bothers me that I can't fix this right now. And I don't even think she was meant it to be funny, but everyone was like, yes, whatever you say. We love you.
Yeah.
So it was really doubly then making all the straight guys angry because they were like, oh, she could just get up there and talk about a wobbly mic stand and being a dyke and then everyone's going to laugh.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm mad about this. And they went up. It got increasingly hostile on the show.
It's so absurd because it's just like you're watching them melt down, but also they're just proving her point. Like the more and more they go, it's just like, well, you're just playing yourself right now.
What, also – If you think you're so much funnier than her, then get up and do some fucking jokes. Don't complain and whine and be a baby about it.
Yeah.
This idea, too, that there's only finite amount of success for everybody is so fucked up. And it's it's just I think it's totally divisive in a community. That would be great if we could all kind of band together and help each other.
Yeah.
I know that's like a hippie thing to say, but there's no – the people who want – us to think that are people in charge who are giving out the TV shows.
Yeah.
And that doesn't have anything to do with us and our friends.
Right, right.
And it never has. So don't be a dick to your fucking – your colleague.
Right.
Because she got a Netflix special and everyone's talking about her.
Yeah. Do you – I've seen so many people, even people who are not like straight white dudes, feel like Nanette like truly changed the way that they think about making comedy. Like it fucked me up where I'm like I need to like throw everything away that I've ever done and like start over and be like – just like – I think
in
the
what
thing,
way?
The thing that shook me the most, she had this thing about like self-deprecating humor. But when you're on the margins, self-deprecating humor kind of crosses the line from being humble to humiliating yourself for the sake of other people's laughs. It's like, you know, people – you're kind of getting people to laugh at you and not really with you, which, you know, you can debate whether or not that's entirely true. You're still owning the laugh. You're still, like, getting up there and owning it, even if you are poking fun at yourself. But it made me think a lot about, like – if I get up on stage and tell jokes about myself and being gay, am I like giving people permission to laugh at gay people who maybe shouldn't have that permission?
Yeah.
And it just made me think way more about like who actually is the butt of the jokes that I'm telling.
I also think that with her the timing of her special coming out, it just feels like people who are on the margins have more – I don't want to say permission, but it's safer for us to say like, no, fuck you. I'm going to make fun of you. You're not going to make fun of me. I'm going to make fun of you. And I'm not going to step here and make fun of myself because we're going to talk about how fucked up you are right now.
Yeah.
Guy in power or person in power or whatever. That didn't necessarily feel as safe to do, I think, pre-Me Too because it felt like, oh, well, you're just an angry bitch. Or you're just an angry gay man.
Yeah.
You're just angry. And now it's like, well, no, I can be angry and funny at the same time.
Yeah.
This doesn't have to be just a punching myself in the face situation.
Right, right. Yeah, there was this other thing. I feel like I've read, like, every think piece about, like, Just for Laughs and everything. But, like, there's a lineup on Netflix, the stand-ups, I think, where it's just, like, 15-minute sets from a bunch of people, most of whom are, like, just not, like, a straight white dude. And most of them, like, get up there, and at least the first joke is, like, about what makes them not a straight white person, like, what sets them apart. And that impulse comes from a place of, like, most audiences, like, the default is a straight white dude. So you have to, like, in order to get the audience on your side, you have to point out what makes you different.
Well, we need to also make sure – I mean, there just needs to be some sort of initiative, too, to be like, I'd love to have an audience at the Improv that's not all – that's not a bunch of bros from Orange County. That would be nice.
Who wouldn't? Yeah.
I remember – okay, this has nothing to do with comedy, but it is tangential. So I was at the Magic Castle, which is a
– As you do.
You go – you know, it's a Tuesday. You got nothing to do. You go right to
a full tuxedo.
Magic Castle for one of their delicious steaks. And hand tricks. And sleight of hand. Hand tricks is a different thing.
So you were just turning tricks at the Magic Castle.
Right next to the telephone that you pick up and then you see a skeleton. That's a real thing. I don't know what the trick is. You're just like, there's a skeleton behind the mirror. I'm supposed to be scared. I have a 10-year-old car. I've been an adult for a while. So there was a guy there who does this amazing thing where he does silhouette cut portraits, but he does them with scissors.
Uh-huh.
So he'll cut your silhouette out of a black piece of paper with a pair of scissors, and it's fucking brilliant. And this guy is probably the only guy in the universe who does it. And I was just so fascinated with him. And he said, I was talking to him too long.
Yeah.
He needed to make money. And I was like, I need to know everything about you, Mark, or whatever his name is. And he said, a lot of guys won't do it because they think it's gay.
What?
And I was like, wait, they think their profile is gay?
Silhouettes are gay.
But I think about that when I think about like like places like the Magic Castle, places like the Improv, places like the Comedy Store, they have just traditionally been like, that's where dudes go to laugh.
Yeah.
And we've got to change that.
Yeah.
Comedy places need to be comedy venues need to be places where everyone feels safe and everyone feels welcome.
Right, right.
So I think it's twofold. It's like the comedians feeling like they're safe to say whatever they want to say, and then the audience also being representative of who the comedians are on stage.
Yeah. Do you feel like you like are typically performing for people who are like they listen to your podcast and like they're coming out for
Please,
you?
Please, yeah. I mean, I rarely have to have my like ass handed to me unless I go really far too deep and then everyone's like, no, Aaron, you can't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, do you go? I go back and forth between like, should I go try to do something at an open mic and see how it goes? Like as a thing of like, am I really funny?
Yeah.
Can I make a bunch of strangers laugh? I don't know.
I feel guilty about it. Like I should be able to do that.
But also you get to – there's – it's you know, this is part of it, I think, now that we're talking about it. It's like, do I really deserve this as a person who's been on the margins? Like, do I really deserve this thing? Maybe I should go do this other thing where I put myself in danger and, like, have people throw beer bottles at my head.
Right. I purposely make myself uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Has there been, like, a venue that you've been to where you're like, I can't believe I just had to do that?
Well – no, but I remember there was a green room we were in once in Atlanta that was the – it had – the floor was unfinished.
Uh-huh.
I'm not talking like it was like raw concrete. I'm saying it was like dirt. And there was the electric meters for the whole building was in there. Were in there.
Uh-huh.
And there was nowhere to – we were in a utility closet. And I remember thinking, I think this is what we deserve.
Yeah.
I think this is exactly what we deserve. I do think there's a couple of cities that definitely have different tones.
Yeah.
Like Boston's tough. Mm-hmm. Like, you better bring your A game when you come to Boston and San Francisco.
I was scared of Boston because I've heard stories about how, like, if you bomb in Boston, they'll, like, beat the shit out of you. Like, so you'll get beat up back, like, in the alley behind the comedy club.
They're like, you wasted my time and my money.
Yeah, yeah. I make some offhand joke about, like, because I was Catholic. I was, like, raised Catholic.
I like the way that you said it. I was Catholic. Me too.
Yeah?
Yeah, I know. And, I know what you went through. Well, right. I don't know exactly what you went through, but I know kind of what you went through.
I was never an altar boy.
Okay,
like,
good.
I was never around any priests for an extended period of time. Not alone. Never alone. But I've made some joke along those lines in Boston, and that was, yeah, that's like, you might as well spit in the Pope's face.
They're like, we're still covering up crimes. How dare you?
I was like, no. This is, we've all seen Spotlight. There's no, you can't ignore this.
No. I was asking my aunt about that, because they all went to Catholic school, and I was like, do you think anyone in the family was, anything happened? And she was like, well, I don't know for sure, but I do know that Father O'Leary used to take an all-boys trip to Myrtle Beach. Oh, people would let the fucking priest take their boys to Myrtle Beach for a week. Can you imagine in the 70s? Like, it's not the 40s where you're dumb.
Right.
I don't know why I thought people in the 70s were way smarter. The years that we poisoned the environment, people were letting that happen.
This might be unrelated. In fact, it probably is unrelated. But I never went to, like, Catholic, like, day school. Like, I didn't go to, like, Catholic
private school.
The brainwashing,
yeah.
Right. I had, like, you know, a weekly, like, kind of Sunday school thing after CCD. I don't know if you had.
You dipped your toe in. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But my dad went to, like, private Catholic school all throughout his childhood.
No.
And in high school, they had to do, like, gym class, swimming, naked.
This is just a Chicago thing.
Apparently it's a Chicago. I feel like my spotlight is going to be uncovering that this was like an absurd thing.
Because like,
Barry's dad also said the same thing, where they had to do like high school swimming class completely naked and have like chicken fights.
That is rentboy.com. That's what that is.
My dad told this to us, and none of us believed him. He tried.
What was his angle? Like, this is a crazy thing, and everyone's like, "Dad, you were lightly
molested."
Well,
because I was always like, I still am like nerd, chubby, gay. When I was in high school, I was like, "I'm not taking gym class. Whatever you have to do, like, get the doctor to write me a note. It got me nowhere. I was like, I have swimmer's ear. If like a drop of water gets in my ear, my brain will explode. And the doctor was like, I'll write you a prescription for earplugs. So I was that kid with like earplugs, nose plug, goggles. But my dad was like, I had like, you'll get through it. I had to swim naked. It was like, get over
it. I am shocked.
Yeah. And we didn't really believe him until one day we were listening to like the radio in the car. Why boys swam naked in Chicago high schools.
And what's the answer?
A WBEZ report.
Curious City is the show.
I just assumed, like, whenever I heard this story, that it was like, that was normal. Like, kids in the 70s were just naked, I guess.
But just for swimming.
Yeah.
Not for any other. Why? Because it resembles a bath? Is that what it's because they're wet?
I think it was like sanitary reasons. Yeah.
That makes no sense.
This is me. I would be the superintendent that would justify it.
Don't you want your butthole and your pee hole to just be anything that's going to come off of it just to be inside your bathing suit?
Yeah. I don't know how we got on this topic besides me just.
You were raised Catholic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think it was necessarily related because it wasn't just Catholic schools.
It was all public schools, and yeah. It wasn't the girls.
No. They swam separately.
Right.
But so, did the girls have to swim nude with each other and also chicken fight?
No.
That's why I think it's a weird gender thing.
Yeah.
You're making the guys fight naked, but not the girls. Like, be equal with your weirdness.
Yeah.
Girls, punch each other, get in the water, take off your clothes, and punch each other in the face.
So did you go to, like, Catholic school or just, like, weekly?
No, my mom went to Catholic school, but we just went. My mom was weird about religion. She was very like, the church felt like, I know she wasn't sexually abused by the church, but she was definitely like beaten and stuff with rulers and things like that. So she had that part of her, but then she also felt kind of safe at church. So whenever we'd move, we'd find the Catholic church and then go to that, which is weird in the South. Being a Catholic in Texas it's like being Jewish.
Because it's like,
no one is Catholic.
Most people are like evangelical.
Baptist, Methodist. Again, yeah. Born again Christian, evangelical. Yeah. They don't understand Catholicism.
Yeah. My dad's brother slapped a nun and got expelled because they always use like corporal punishment. And one day he was like, fought back and got expelled. So
it's so sad to think people didn't take the side of kids in that situation.
Yeah.
How hopeless must you be to be like, well, I'm going to go to school, get this shit kicked out of me, and I'm going to come home. My parents aren't going to care.
Yeah. That's always so weird to me. I feel like I've seen a lot of like older comics make jokes like that. When it's like, when we were young, if I got beat up and told my mom, she'd go thank the guy who did it. And it's like, what is wrong with you?
That's why baby boomers ruined the world, because they were like, fuck, no one was here for us. So fuck everybody. We're burning it down.
Yeah. Fortunately, I did not go to a daily Catholic school.
You just got the weekend treatment.
We should. Well, I do want to ask you about your book.
Yeah.
So your book is Feminasty. Mm-hmm. Is there a subtitle?
Yeah.
The Complicated Woman's Guide to Surviving the Patriarchy Without Drinking Herself to Death.
Which I'm sure you can appreciate the last part. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Very hard not to just drink yourself into a stupor these days. Although I managed to do it anyway.
What was the process of writing like?
I'm going to be very honest.
Yeah.
Author to author.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to say that writing a book is fun.
No.
And I'm not going to say that it was enjoyable.
Right.
But I feel really proud of myself that I've done it, and it felt really good when it was over.
Yeah.
I felt like, oh my God, it was almost like, I'm trying to think of a way I could do this without being insulting to anybody, but like, I do feel like I was in a fugue state when I was doing it, just like stress style writing and just getting it done. And then when I finally had it done, I was like, I did something that was so incredibly hard. And I'm really proud of myself.
Yeah.
And I would love to write another one. That's what a damaged person does. You go through a really stressful experience and you're like, more, please.
Right.
It was, but you know what's good? I mean, I don't know if you felt like this about your book, which is very personal also, but mine is a mix of stats and statistics and kind of patterns of what are happening to women in ways that they may or may not realize, mixed in with my personal experience. And I felt like when I first started writing it, I was really mad at a lot of people. And then by the time I was done, I could find forgiveness and then write it in a different way where I didn't seem so angry about the stuff that had happened to me and felt more like, oh no, this is, I actually needed to go through this so I could tell this story.
Yeah.
Not that I would ever be like, let's go have a bunch of bad experiences so I can write about it. But just having more of a healthier outlook on stuff like my parents are May December romance. There's 16 years difference. I didn't realize that I had until I wrote this book that I had this pattern of dating older men, and I didn't really understand. I just thought I was like, I'm just too mature, which is not true. It's because my parents set up that pattern, and then I, you know, followed it.
Right.
And then here's why I think it's disgusting. Having been an 18-year-old who slept with a 35-year-old because I thought like, oh, this makes me an adult.
Right.
Just unraveling all of that kind of damage and stuff to be like, oh, actually, this is why I was doing it, and this is why I don't think it's right. But if you have a relationship that's like this and it's healthy, great. But let's make sure it's healthy. Let's make sure everyone's on equal footing here.
Yeah.
Because oftentimes it's not.
Yeah. I do like that there's like a through line, though, that it's not just like random stories.
It's really just like how can I – but it's sort of – it is a lot of stories, but couched in like, hey, here's what I went through. You probably went through something similar. Mm-hmm. I don't – something adjacent. And this is how it affects us in the bigger picture and why we have to address this. And just seeing – I don't know, just kind of outing that stuff in a way that doesn't feel like I'm just like, I'm an expert. This is why you should listen to me. It's like, no, I, you know, have had this surgery or I've been through this or this thing has happened to me. And this is why I think you should listen to me because I've been through it and here I'm on the other side. And I know a lot of stuff about, you know, STDs and breast cancer and a lot of other scary things that people don't want to talk about.
Yeah.
And I know about them. Unfortunately, I know firsthand about all those things, but yeah.
You're an expert.
I'm an expert.
And you
on terrible things.
Oh, everybody should trust everything you say.
With a grain of salt, trust everything I say.
I want to quickly transition to basically, I pulled a bunch of your tweets about a variety of topics, and I just want to expand on these are things that
you want 300 characters?
Yeah. Okay. I want an expansion. The song Hey Baby by No Doubt. You hate this song.
I don't like it.
According to a tweet you sent in 2009.
Okay.
We went far back.
You know what? Because I've been very heavy on Instagram the last year and a half. Well,
your tweet was, I hate the song Hey Baby by No Doubt more than the apartheid.
That was back when you could joke about something like that. You know, there weren't real problems.
I hadn't even read the full tweet until just now.
I have to pull up. Okay, well, first of all, there's only 7 words in the whole song.
Is there really? I don't know.
Hey, baby, hey, baby, hey. Girl say, boy say. Hey, baby, hey, baby, hey. Hey, baby, baby. That's the chorus.
Yeah, well, I mean, this, yeah.
Here's what it is. Okay, I'm the kind of girl that hangs with the guys. First of all, fuck you. You've diluted our power. You've made us a weaker gender. This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah.
Like a fly on the wall with my secret eyes. I don't know what that means. Taking it all in, trying to be feminine. It just is reinforcing this weird like.
Yeah.
I'm a girl, but I just like hanging with guys because guys are so fun. It's like, well, I guess you've been hanging out with bitches and you can't find better friends. I don't know what that is. It's a weird thing that girls do sometimes.
Coldplay.
Mm-hmm. No,
I don't know why all these tweets are from 2009.
No, I love it. Please, let's revisit who I was.
Has someone already used cold puke to describe Coldplay?
This is not a good joke. This is not a good joke.
I love it. It's perfect.
That is a tweet from someone who used to love Coldplay and is now embarrassed about it. Just full disclosure.
I think this is related, but when you forget why you were angry about something is one of them, which I think is appropriate.
This is the Coldplay situation.
Yeah.
But I haven't – here's what's fucked up about the Trump presidency. I can't even allow myself to be angry about petty things like this anymore because my energy is so wrapped up in like – are there children dying in detention centers?
Yeah.
I really want our world to just be back to the freedom that I had where I could just complain about Coldplay. That's all I want. That's my neutral. That's my neutral is like, oh, this stupid thing. I can just complain about this.
I don't know if we'll ever be back there.
Like, I started listening to Dave Matthews Band again. That's how bad it is right now. I was like, oh, this does take me back to a nicer place.
Yeah. You're just like, you're reverting back to like your caveman times.
It's really weird. I've been listening to a lot of music from high school.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. It's so weird. It's like a blanket. It's like a gravity blanket, which I want.
Yeah.
Do you want one of those?
I do want a gravity blanket. Yeah. But I'm
too hot right
now. I'm convinced that it will actually make a difference.
I've heard from two people that it's fantastic, and they're the only two people I know who own one.
I'll absolutely order one like the second I walk out of here now.
The rumor is there's glass beads in it, so you can never destroy it because then you have glass all over your house.
God forbid I rip my blanket and I have shards of glass in my skin.
What if you have a full charcuterie plate on your lap while you're watching The Fall and you accidentally stab a hard cheese knife through it?
What an absurd
situation.
Well, that too. But like, you're just sleeping with like a plate of glass on you?
It's like the weight of it. It's somehow.
Well, we'll find out when I
can't wait.
When I wake up in a pile of my own blood.
I want to see it unboxed. I want to see the whole thing. I want to see you experience it for the first time.
Well, I think we can make that happen. On that note... Where can people find you and your work?
Oh, well, you can get the book on feminasty.com. There's a bunch of links to different retailers depending on who you're angry at and who you're not.
Yes.
and then I'm at Gibblertron. That's my last name if I was a robot.
Right.
Gibblertron. Yeah.
And the book comes out September 4th.
And then Throwing Shade comes out every Thursday.
Amazing.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. You're always a fucking delight.
Thank you. Thanks for being
on. Is it hard being
on.
Such a delight?
Yes. Yes. It is exhausting. And I'm going to have to go take a nap to get over it.
You've earned it.
All right, we're almost there. We're almost at the end of the show. But first, our chasers. Chasers are the good stuff that helps all the bad shit go down. Barry, do you have a chaser?
I do have a chaser.
What is it?
Originally, it was going to be the concert that you took us to.
But
my chaser this week does include a time where we were talking about On the Run tour.
True.
It's Pop Rocket. So there's this podcast called Pop Rocket, and it's usually hosted by Guy Branum, who has been a friend of the pod. And we were on their show, and it was I'm on mic for it, and it was my first time being on a podcast that I was not producing. So that was a fun chaser for me. It was a great conversation. It should be out by the time this episode comes out. So if you want to go listen to it, Matt and I are on it. And yeah, it was a good time. It made me happy. That was my chaser for the week.
Your first and only time on a podcast that you have not produced. So don't get used to it.
All right. What about you, Matt?
My chaser is a franchise. It is a piece of American iconography. It is a piece of our culture. It is Mamma Mia. Because I have been listening to Mamma Mia, the soundtrack, for what feels like forever, even though I had just watched the movie Mamma Mia for the very first time, like a month ago.
And then we watched it together this past week, and it was my first time.
Again. And it's a horrible movie, even though it was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Picture.
It was so fun, though.
And Meryl Streep was nominated as Best Actress, which feels like it's only because it's Meryl Streep, but I don't give a shit, okay? It's amazing. And now Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again is out, and Cher is putting out an entire cover album of ABBA songs.
What?
Yes.
I did not know this.
How did you not know this? It's all that the internet has been talking about. And by the internet, I mean like five gay people that I follow. She just released the first teaser song, which is Gimme, Gimme, Gimme. Anyway, Mamma Mia, what a joy. And that's that's it. Thanks for listening to Unhappy Hour. You can head to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Stitcher. Wherever you get podcasts, hit that subscribe button, then rate us and review us, but only if it's nice. Unhappy Hour is a production of Pineapple Street Media. It's produced by Barry Finkel, Claire Tai, and me, Matt Bellassai. Special thanks to Jenna Weiss-Berman, Max Linsky, Josh Gwynn, and Dana at Earwolf. Music by Hansdale Sue. You can find me on all the social medias at Matt Bellassai. And that's it. That's everything. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.